Welcome back. This is Bob Flynn. I'm talking today with Rob Noah about workers' comp and some other issues. And just before the break, you were raising a little quirk in the law. When an employer does not have workers' comp coverage, it is exposed personally to that workers' comp, although the trust fund will, in the first instance, pay the employee and then look to recover the money from the employer. But the employee also has rights to do what you were starting to tell us.
Correct. The employee in that particular case has the right to sue their employer in the regular court system, be it the district or superior court, for their traditional tort damages. So earlier in the program when I was saying that an employee does not have a right to be paid for their pain and suffering within the workers' comp system, the I believe it's Section 66 of the statute, I haven't looked at it for a little bit, but I think that's right, allows you to take your employer into the superior court and sue them in general liability where you can get compensation for pain and suffering, separate and distinct from what the workers' comp provides.
And that strips, in that case, the employer is stripped of the traditional tort defenses like comparative negligence and things of that nature. And the only issue really is whether the injury arose out of and in the course of the employee's employment.
Correct.
Plus causation on the injury.
Correct. And if the case were to be fully tried at the Department of Industrial Accidents, which, again, is the court that hears workers' compensation cases throughout the state, you could take that determination into the Superior Court. And while it's not a slam dunk at that point, it certainly bolsters your claim against the employer directly to already have a court of competent jurisdiction rendering a decision in your favor.
And that the rationale for that brings us back full circle to the rationale for the whole workers' comp system. It's a trade-off. The employer gets, for having workers' comp, immunity to lawsuits. Each of his employees or her employees, the company's employees, have immunity to lawsuits from their fellow employees.
Correct.
But they have to have the workers' compensation in place to be an insured person entitled to that immunity.
And another thing that I would like to say that I want people to understand is that workers' comp is also a system it's a no-fault system, meaning to recover in the regular court system, you have to prove that somebody was negligent and caused your harm as a result of that negligence. With workers' comp, accidents do happen, and sometimes accidents happen because people, well, they're not paying attention. So an example I often use is somebody walking down a second-floor hallway towards a flight of stairs carrying a bunch of boxes in front of their face, and they don't see where they're going. Well, they fall down the stairs and break their leg. Who's at fault? Well, really, they are. Nonetheless, if it's an honest mistake, you are still entitled to be paid compensation during the period of your recovery.
Sure. If they're in the factory and they're carrying the employer's boxes and they're doing their job, and that workers' comp will kick in.
Ordinary negligence is not a bar. However, the corollary to the Section 28 you were talking about previously is, I believe, Section 27 that talks about serious willful misconduct on the part of an employee.
Which would be another defense that some insurers would be pushing if
correct.
Appropriate facts.
If somebody was hurt because of intoxication or drug use.
We have bumbled into my very favorite topic, and that's the courthouse. Because an injured worker, a person injured on a construction site, has not only rights to workers' comp, as we've been talking about, but they have rights to the courthouse, and they have a right to file a suit against the company or persons that negligently caused those injuries other than their employer.
Sure, a third-party case.
That's where, where I fit into your kind of business and to other workers' comp lawyers' kind of business, because those are the cases I handle. I handle the – and we work together, somebody on the comp case and myself on the third-party action. Frequently, it's a general contractor who has an overall job site responsibility for safety, or another subcontractor who is at fault, or an engineer that designed some problem, didn't properly supervise some work that may have an additional responsibility. In those cases, those comp cases and the courthouse cases, they have to be worked together, coordinated amongst all the defendants and the plaintiff and the employee and all that.
Sure, because now you've got a whole bunch of other players coming into the game.
And the ultimate goal is to bring to a seriously injured worker financial security going forward, to take that worry out of their lives.
Especially if the injury is catastrophic and leaves them in a position where they may not be able to get back to any sort of gainful employment.
Yeah.
Workers' comp does provide, in those circumstances, benefits for what's called permanent total disability, which is that long-term security that you're talking about.
Now, there's another feature we should get into before we end our day, and that is SSDI. And I know you do a lot of SSDI work. What is that, and how does that help that person injured at that construction site who's on workers' comp?
Social Security disability is separate from what most people think Social Security is, which is retirement when you hit age 65, 67, or what have you. The federal government does have a disability program for folks who are suffering long-term disabilities. So the way it dovetails is this. First of all, in order to be eligible for Social Security disability, you have to suffer from a disability that lasts or is expected to last 12 consecutive months or more. If you meet that requirement and you meet the disability requirements from Social Security, you are eligible to file a claim for disability with them, not unlike filing a claim for disability with workers' comp. There is a cost savings to the government built in to the program because there's a five-month waiting period. So, quick example, you're hurt January 1st, 2013. You have to convince the government that you're likely to be disabled continuously through January 1, 2014 before you'd be eligible for benefits. But assuming the government found you disabled as of this January, the first day you'd be eligible to receive any money would be June 1st of this year. But if you make the connection and you prove your claim for disability with Social Security, there would be a bump up in your monthly benefit. Social Security gets to take a credit. That is to say, they get to offset or reduce what they pay you while you're getting workers' comp, but there nonetheless is almost never a complete offset. You're always going to get a bump up in your monthly benefit.
Now, these are three different ways of looking at potential recoveries for an injured worker, someone legitimately injured at, for example, our construction site, and with a serious injury that's taking them out of the workforce. And it's a coordination between the SSDI lawyer, which would be you, for example, and the comp lawyer, again you, and the accident lawyer in the courthouse is necessary. People who work together and are familiar with all of the coordination issues, which are many.
It's teamwork.
It is
basically
Teamwork. One of the themes of this show has always been everybody needs a team. It starts with your lawyer. At the end of these cases, we bring in financial planners, structured settlement people, all sorts of, depending on the case, options for people so that whatever they end up with, they have the maximum opportunity to keep it. And that I think, is a problem with resolving these cases. But people need it, and they work hard to get to it. And it's their only peace of mind.
It is their only peace of mind. And one of the important pieces about having the Social Security in those long-term situations is it's almost always going to be there as a safety net underneath the injured worker, regardless of what happens on the third-party end, if there's a third-party case, regardless of the resolution on the workers' comp side of things. The Social Security safety net is very important to the long-term security.
I have to say I've enjoyed this show so much because it certainly is in my wheelhouse. It's certainly in yours. These are all very real issues that we see day to day with people. And I'm glad that you've had an opportunity to talk to our listeners and tell them all about workers' comp, SSDI, and my favorite, Section 28.
Well, it's been a pleasure being here with you today,
Bob.
We'll
see you again soon. This is Bob Flynn. Today we've been talking about workers' comp and accident cases. We'll see you next week and have a great weekend. What's left of it? Enjoy the Super Bowl.